Hey everyone, and welcome back to another episode of Canadian Gamers. And Steven has a story he has to share. He's got to get it off your chest, but be very careful, ladies and gentlemen. This story will not be PG. You might lose sleep over it, and you will forever hate Steven after this. Okay, go ahead.
Okay. I'm really sure you're exaggerating here, but whatever. My adrenaline was pumping a few minutes ago, and you were planning on doing a podcast soon, and I said, let's do it right now because of this. So I was doing my, I was taking out the trash here in my house, and I was emptying out the bin under the kitchen sink when I spotted a mouse. And when I'm, by spotting, I mean it scared the bejesus out of me because I just saw something moving real quick. Obviously, I noticed it was a mouse, and it went somewhere where I knew where it was. Well, obviously under the kitchen sink is not exactly a big area, and not sure how it got there, but I knew that I had one mission, and that was to take that motherfucker out. Damn that mouse. I hate those damn little things. I have two traps in my house, and I usually kill about five mouse or mice every year. So it's not like I have a huge mice problem, but it is a problem that obviously I would rather not have these little critters because you can find little mouse droppings everywhere. They can get into the walls and they can breed. They can multiply pretty fast. So I don't want them. It's usually when the season changes. So the beginning of winter and the end of summer is usually when I see them. When it gets cold, I guess they're trying to seek refuge or whatever you want to call it, and I always find a few. But that was the first time that I actually killed one with my bare hands. I was successful at it. I was very proud. My kids actually witnessed the murder because when they saw me react, they were curious, and they came and saw me kill a mouse in front of their eyes. So they might be traumatized for the rest of their lives as their daddy is a murderer, but it had to go. It was either the mouse or me. But I'm glad to report that I survived this encounter. And
I don't even have words. I just don't have words. I'm going to let the YouTube community pass judgment on you, you monster.
Yeah, I just hate those creatures so much. I don't know why.
So when you're not going around killing defenseless animals, what have you been up to lately?
We've talked last podcast about Nexomon, which I was really, really hyped about.
Hyped about, yeah.
I was hoping for something to keep me occupied during these dark times until the Crown Tundra arrives, because there's not really any other games I'm looking forward to. And this seemed like the perfect fit. Now, I've only played it for 45 minutes, and I'm determined to give it one last chance, at least one. But so far, it's really not good, man. Really not good, like terrible even. Like, I have no idea what to think about this game. Because it's really difficult, but not difficult in the right sense. Like, I haven't died yet, but it's the kind of game, and it's inspired by Pokemon, very, very heavily inspired by Pokemon. So just think, you've played Pokemon by now a lot, so just think in Pokemon Blue, if the first Pidgey you encounter, if it would take you like five Pokeballs to catch it, and if it would take you five Pokemon to like kill it or whatever. It's that kind of difficulty. It makes no sense why at the beginning of the game it's so hard that way. Like, even if when you're using a super effective move, you can't one-shot anybody. It's weird. You don't one-shot people. It takes like 2-3 hits every time. It's really ridiculous. And you know when I mentioned that in Pokemon, the battle system is advantageous to you? Like, you can have, if you play under the default options, you can have free switches and stuff like that. Well, in this game, it's the total contrary. When you switch a Nexomon, you get hit. If the Nexomon kills your Nexomon, then you need to bring another one because obviously that one is dead. Well, not dead, but whatever. Yeah. And when you bring that one in, it takes a hit right away.
Nice.
So it's like there's zero advantages. And then when you play against a trainer, they actually do the turn. So they attack and then you attack. And then they switch. They get a free switch. So it's weird. But like the difficulty really is turning me off because, like I said, it's right at the beginning, you're facing what should be like Pidgeys and Rattatas, basically the level that they should be, and they put up a fight. You need like 3-4 Nexomon to take them out, and even if you bring them at like 2 HP, you still only have like a 20% chance of catching them with the traps, which is weird. Like, these are the beginner level Pokemon, and Nexomon, they should be easy to catch. Like, it's just so weird. I don't like this difficulty at all. So far, I haven't found an XP share, which means if I want to grind, I need to grind each Nexomon individually. So, while I've been complaining, many people have complained about the difficulty of Pokemon. Like, this is the extreme, like, right of that. Like, this is borderline unplayable for me. And it's like, if I'll give it another shot, maybe I'm missing something. But from what I've read in the reviews, I'm not. But it's like it gives zero regards to your time. It disregards your time. It doesn't care about your time. So it looks like this is a game where you need to grind just to play it. And in 2020, it doesn't seem like the kind of game that appeals to me.
Yeah, no. I mean, the first Pidgey I met did kill me, but that's besides the point. No, I'm kidding. I'm totally kidding. I'm bad at games, but that's a whole other level. That kind of sucks because, like, you know, you were... Okay, well, okay, let me back up here. Is it really that hard to make a Pokemon clone, but better than Pokemon? Like, I don't understand. Are people worried that they're just going to get flat-out sued? Is that what this is all about? Like, this is something that I don't understand, and I've never understood, where it's like, if you have a good formula, right? So take, like, The Legend of Zelda. I've been uploading a whole bunch of games, right, to the Polymega. And, you know, like, okay, so we have The Legend of Zelda. Legend of Zelda's out on the NES, right? Like... You could say revolutionizes like action adventure type of games. Okay, cool. So it sells, you know, millions of copies back in the day. Now you are Sega and or NEC, right? I know here in North America, TurboGrafx-16 was, you know, largely like just ignored. But in Japan, PC Engine, you know, is seriously a contender. Like it's doing very well. And I don't understand why companies don't take what is really successful and then reimagine it a little bit. Now, I know we're going to get tons of comments from people who are like, what are you stupid? There was Newtopia. There was, the Oasis game there on Genesis. Like, was it Legend of Oasis? I think it was. Or is that the Saturn one? But whatever the case may be. And... I just never understood this. I'm like, I'm not saying that you create a character and call it Blink or something like that, you know, like, I'm not saying, like, make a carbon copy, but I don't understand why other developers, like, don't sort of play with that a little bit and create something that, you know, perfects it in a lot of different ways. And with Pokemon, there's so much opportunity to really perfect that. Like, there really is, because there's, like, if you had, like, an open-world Pokemon game, like the wild area of Pokemon now, that allowed easy drop-in, drop-out support with real people online, you know, because they wouldn't have to worry about friends codes and all this sort of stuff, up the difficulty, or at least give the option to up the difficulty, little things like that. I know the press would say, like, yeah, well, it's just a clone or just a carbon copy, but the truth is, like, if you go back and you play, like, Newtopia 1 right now, I'd have to check, so please don't beat me, guys. But I'm pretty sure that came out before The Legend of Zelda Link to the Past. And if I'm not mistaken, and again, I could be, all right, I could be, but I think that had 8-way directional movement. And if it did, then that's a significant improvement in and of itself. You know, even if it's a clone, the fact that, you know, you're allowing for more directions to move around, that changes the battle system a little bit, makes it a little more fluid and so on and so forth. And I get that, like, you know, they would be accused of just like straight up copying, but I still don't get it. Like, it's been decades now and there still really isn't like a direct clone to Pokemon that improves on it. I don't, or am I crazy?
No, you're not crazy. I'm trying to find the name because in the game, on the Game Boy Color and the Game Boy Advance, there was a few series. I think there was two. I'm trying to find them because I'm kind of, I regret this because when I was a kid, I didn't have the disposable income that I have now, as you'll find out during the Saturn video that Jared will be posting soon. But there was, I was a huge Pokemon fan. And there was a few kind of ripoffs released for Game Boy Color, and I never bought them. And now today they're like super expensive because every Game Boy Color or Game Boy Advance game is apparently. And I've never tried them. And I'm wondering if how good they were, because I've always said like with Ni No Kuni and Dragon Quest Monsters and stuff like that, which are really not that similar to Pokemon, besides the fact that you can recruit monsters to battle with you in some occasions, and even Monster Hunter stories the same way. They don't play really similar, and I always wonder why somebody didn't just copy and paste Pokemon, like give them another name, like I don't know, Monster Dudes.
Okay, for all you marketing directors out there, do not listen to Steven at all.
Oh, come on.
Monster Dudes.
Monster Dudes is a perfect name. And then have them like catch them with like monster balls.
Oh my god.
And basically have pretty much the exact same game, maybe a few twists here and there. And you're new, obviously different creatures and whatnot, but just, it works. Why not copy it? And like with Nexomon, Nexomon is the closest I've ever played to that because it's only a single player game, which I like. There's no multiplayer, whatever, but I'm fine with that. I was fine with just, I like the Pokemon single player stuff, so why not? But I don't know. Nobody seems to be getting the basics right. And I have a Robopon game. And these games were like Pokemon. They were released in different versions. Like this one had a Sun version, and I believe it had a version that was exclusive to Game Boy Advance. It was weird. And of course there was Digimon, but the Digimon games were never played like Pokemon at all. And Monster Rancher was the same. So it's like, I don't know why.
Okay,
people
I got to correct myself, okay? Because I know people are gonna like lose their minds. So I was mistaken. Newtopia was only a four-way direction game, but still, like, you never got an opportunity to play that game on the Wii Virtual Console because you were going through puberty at the time, and you weren't really playing much retro stuff then. But I really think, like, I would have liked you to have tried that game and gave me your like real thoughts, because this topic I think is really interesting, because I don't get why more companies don't do that. If you can really improve it, don't just copy for the sake of copying, but I mean, you know, if you can improve upon something, why the hell not? And I know, like, look at the Breath of the Wild, right? Like, there was this Japanese I forget what studio that was, anyways, that made like a very similar game to Breath of the Wild, and it got like ripped apart by the media. And I was like, well, you know what? Like, I actually would have tried that had I had more time, because it would have been interesting to see, like, was it really like, you know, just a carbon copy, or did they actually expand on things, improve on things? Because don't just like cash in on someone else's success. That's stupid. But if you can really make it better, why the hell not? And a great example I have of very similar series is Shining Force and Fire Emblem. I miss those days, and it's so sad because, like, no one, or at least virtually no one in North America, ever got to experience exactly what you're talking about. Like, those two series are very, very similar to one another. And unfortunately, when Shining Force was actually selling copies in North America, it was during the Genesis era, and Unfortunately for us, Fire Emblem didn't exist because Nintendo looked and was like, oh, it's not worth bringing over. So it kind of sucks because it would be super cool if there was like, you know, you have Pokemon. It's not going anywhere. It's still going to take over the world. But it'd be really cool if there was like another series that like really challenged it.
Yeah, it would be. And it's also, you just remind me of this because you were talking about them not wanting to bring Fire Emblem over. They almost did the same thing with Pokemon, man. Can you imagine that? And like, I think they originally did not want Pikachu to be the face of the franchise because they thought us Americans, or Canadians obviously, but Americans would not love Pikachu because he was too cute and not like kick-ass enough.
Yeah, but it makes sense. What year? It was 96, no?
96 was when it was released in Japan, 98 here.
So, yeah, come on. That makes perfect sense because...
But can you imagine the mistake it would have been not to bring that over?
No, of course. Absolutely, man. Are you kidding? It would have been a colossal mistake. And I really wonder if there's any like internal like letters or emails or whatever, because email was just starting up in like 96, 97. By businesses, it would have been really interesting to see, did Final Fantasy VII have a play on that? I really wonder. Like, because, you know, like, FF7 hit in 97, and it, like, just exploded, right? Like, that's when everyone was like, oh shit, like, we need to get an RPG out, like now, like, as fast as possible. I really wonder if it actually had anything to do with Nintendo of America basically saying, like, do we have anything, you know, like, do we have anything that we could port over? Maybe not at all, but the timing, I find the timing very, like, highly suspect. Because if it released in Japan in 96, there's no reason it wouldn't have been out in 97 here. There's even with the translation, there's no reason. There's like, it could have easily have come. So I really wonder if FF7.
Yeah, there's a bit more backstory to that though, because they also, the versions that were released in 96 were, I believe, green and red, right? Green and red, and then they released blue later, or it was green and blue and they released red later, and those versions are not the versions we got. They were even more buggier and glitchy than the ones we got. So they're, even though there's a 2 years separation, they did also release, that's the only game where there was four versions released in Japan, because the originals were so buggy. Like, the also, okay, well, the, no, okay, the designs of the Pokemon themselves, you should look at the images of, you should look at what Mew looked like in Pokemon Green. Like, it's ridiculous. They are so funny, mate. Even Mew too, like the
really?
Visuals.
Let me look at that.
Yeah,
Mew.
Look, Pokemon Green Mew Green. Sprite, I believe, is that.
Oh yeah, he looks funny. Yeah, he looks very funny.
Yeah, anyway, so basically, I think they took another year to work on the... I don't remember,
okay,
if it
fair.
Was blue or if it was red. I believe it was red, the definitive version before yellow there, but I don't know. Anyway, and obviously we never got green. We got red and blue, but these red and blue were not like the originals. They were the ports. Not the ports,
yeah,
but the remastered, whatever version you want to call it.
Yeah, and I mean, I, like, okay, like, and like I said, guys, like, it's entirely possible that what I'm saying is full of crap, right? Like, it's totally possible. It's just that time period is really interesting, right? Like, that's when North America it changed. Like, it just, it completely changed. It went from, like, oh, RPGs are, like, you know, like, whatever, to, like, oh my god, we gotta get RPGs. I mean, if you look at the release schedule from 95 or say even 94 up until Final Fantasy VII's release, you can count the RPGs on your hands, you know, like, there's just so few. And then after FF7, it's just like, it's unbelievable. Like, it's literally, there's like 200 RPGs that were released the next year. It's crazy.
Could be.
So this reminds me of something, if you're okay with it. I might tangent a little bit here. I watched a really interesting video, and I am so sorry to the creator of it. I didn't think that we were going to be like jumping on a podcast here. So this is one of our spontaneous ones. So I didn't actually get this prepared, but he really opened my eyes to something that I never really thought of. He did a video basically talking about what killed the Saturn. And in a video that I did a number of years ago, probably like over a decade now, I talked about a lot of the big stuff, right? Like the fact that they did a surprise launch in North America, the fact they didn't have Sonic, the fact that it was $100 more expensive than the PlayStation, and a lot of, you know, I covered like a bunch of different things. The failure of the 32X, even the Sega CD, which I know a lot of people like, myself included, in and of itself in North America, it started to tarnish Sega's brand, you know, with all those full motion videos and stuff like that. People were like, what the F is this? So I don't care if it was successful or not. It really did start to impact the brand. But anyway, what this guy did is he basically looked at it from a completely different perspective. And I really enjoyed this, where he was like, it, like, did all of those things hurt Sega and like hurt the Saturn? Absolutely, right? Like the timing of release and all this, absolutely. But was it the nail in the coffin? And what he argues is that no. And he takes like the Xbox One, the PlayStation 3 as examples, like as case studies, to basically show that even when you have horrendous launches, like PS3, people forget, but like, yeah, it was hyped, but it bombed that launch because of its price. I mean, there wasn't even that many copies because it was just so expensive to make. And then it was complicated to design games on. And much like the Saturn, right? Saturn was expensive. Saturn was tough to make games on. But what he really did, and I love this, I absolutely love this, was he said, where the hell were the games? And then he did a little bit of like a history lesson on the video games that were released during the Genesis and beyond, and basically highlighted a fact that is absolutely true. So to a guy like you who wasn't like, you know, a giant Sega fan or anything, if I asked you, you know, name a couple of franchises that Sega's put out, can you name me a couple?
Like first party Sega franchises?
Yeah, just Sega franchises.
Yeah, not much.
Yeah, exactly. But that's it, right? That's exactly the point. And if I ask you to do the same thing with Nintendo, can you?
Yeah, I can name pretty much every franchise Nintendo has made. But exactly. That's because I'm a Nintendo fanboy, though. I'm sure.
No, but even if
Sega
no,
has
but okay, we don't. But whoa, almost hold on, as many. Here's the thing: even if you are a Sega fan, I am a Sega fan. You cannot ignore the fact that Sega of America published so many crappy games, even during the Genesis, that it was unbelievable. For every Sonic the Hedgehog and Shining Force that you had an unbelievable amount of other crappy platformers. That Hawaiian based one there with a guy on the beach there, like they're awful. They're just absolutely terrible games. And if you look at the Saturn as an example, it followed that tradition. If you look at like, because I was uploading all my games, right, and I just happened to stumble across this video at the same time, and it was like, this is so true. Like, this guy is 100% accurate. That, you know, year one, you have like Gen War, Black Fire, games that like they control poorly, they don't look good, and it's like, this is really what you want to put up against, you know, Mario 64 and you know, Sony's like launch titles. Like, is this truly what you want to do? And it was so interesting because he was like, where the hell was Streets of Rage? Where was Sonic the Hedgehog? Where were all of these, you know, like Shining Force, right? Where were these titles in year one? Why were they released, and some of them never, like Sonic, why were these games released years after the launch of the console? Who the hell does that? And especially when you look at what came with the Sega CD and all the full motion video games, he basically was postulating that, like, It's like, it never had a chance because of the practices that they did. And even when you go on the Dreamcast, and a lot of people really like the Dreamcast, they still release quite a few titles that they published that were just god-awful. And it's interesting. It's really interesting. And even when they went third party, if you remember this, Virtua Fighter was exclusive to the PlayStation. Panzer Dragoon Orta was exclusive to the Xbox. Nintendo got, you know, they did the collaboration with F-Zero. But I was like, that's not what you want to do. Yeah, exactly. But that's not what you want to do. Like, as a third party, that is not what you want to do. You want to get your games in as many people's hands as humanly possible, especially considering you were just competing with these platforms. So anyways, I just really thought it was a really, really interesting video. I'd give the guys kudos, but I unfortunately don't remember. Just if you check out, like, you know, What Killed the Sega Saturn, yeah, you'll find a video on this. And just to wrap that up is the fact that even today, in 2020, Sega really hasn't changed that philosophy much, in the sense, like, they still make really weird business decisions. And me, you know, recording footage for Saturday...
When's the last time Sega made a good Sonic game? And Sonic Mania doesn't count because Sega didn't make it. Like, what's...
That's right.
When's the last time they made a good Sonic game?
I think Ahmed, he says it's like Sonic Colors. Ahmed, I'm really sorry if I just, like, totally butchered that. But, like, because he's the last bastion of hope for Sonic. And kudos to him that he's still, you know, like, supporting it. I mean, for me, the last time I was even interested was Sonic Adventure 2 on the Dreamcast. Like, once it left, I was just, you know, the reviews come out and it's like, it's awful. And I just don't understand that. And when I was uploading all these games to the system, I really realized, I was like, wow, like, there are so many franchises that Sega has and intellectual properties that they have that, you know, these games could be revived. Look at Streets of Rage 4. Like, apparently it's fantastic. And it's like, that's great, but I don't think they even made that. I think it was someone else that made it, and they're just publishing it, no?
I have no clue, man.
But I'm pretty sure. I don't think that was developed in-house. So anyways, and I know, like, Panzer Dragoon, the remake on the Switch, that too wasn't developed by them. It was developed by someone else. And I'm just like, it's okay. It's okay to do that. I'm totally down with that. It's just like, where the hell are all your good games? Like Fire Emblem. Look at Fire Emblem. It's like Fire Emblem and Shining Force have literally swapped places. It makes no sense. Shining Force was a really popular game. It wasn't, I mean, like, let's not exaggerate here. It was basically their Metroid. So, like, it had a really large fan base but didn't sell super well. But now you have Fire Emblem. And Fire Emblem's doing amazing. If Sega were smart, release another Shining Force, right? Don't number it, just put a subtitle like Fire Emblem does. And in the marketing in North America, call it the original. You know what I mean? Because it was released here before Fire Emblem was. And, like, there's so much potential for different things. I just don't get some of these companies, you know? I just sit back sometimes, scratch my head, and I'm like, am I living in an alternate reality?
Yeah, I don't want to get into that debate again. I just, as a Nintendo kid, I had a cousin with a Genesis. I obviously played with Genesis from time to time, even as an adult. Eventually had a Genesis, got a Saturn. The Saturn, surprising though, I really love what I played on it, but the Master System, I never got it. And it might be because I played it so late, the game, but I never understood how people could choose. And I know you've explained this to me before, and it's fine. Everybody loves what they loves, but to me, the SNES is so much superior to the Genesis. It's not even close, but for some, that's blasphemy. I just don't see it. I never did, and no, I probably never will.
Like, no, but that, and that's fair. Like, I do think that's totally fair. I really do.
Because I just watched a documentary, docu-series on Netflix called High Score. are high scores. I don't know if it's pro or not, but and there's an episode on the Genesis, and it's like, and the series is fine. It's fun. It's just, as a gamer, it's a bit frustrating because it's stuff we've seen before so many times now, like even on YouTube docuseries and pretty sure other places before. So it's basically a rehash, although there is, it's fun to learn, like you see, I think the founder of EA here, the last episode is the founder of IC, the makers of Doom. Is it IC? What's the...
ID Software.
Yeah, ID. So that's pretty cool. You see how that game originated and how these guys basically made the Wolfenstein 3D and then did a press release announcing Doom before they even started working on it and promising all and then delivering before the end of the year. It's just, wow, these guys are fantastic. It's fun. But yeah, the episode on Sega, and unfortunately they did not go into the downfall of Sega.
Okay.
That would have been maybe completed that episode a bit better, but still it was like, man, I don't get, because the Genesis at one point was outselling Nintendo in North America, so
yeah,
obviously people loved it, and the marketing was genius. Yep. The president was a genius, like the way he marketed
Kalinske.
It.
Yeah, Kalinske, he was gold. His problem though, and seriously, I will put this on him. He published anything thrown at him, and that was a huge problem, because that's why there are so many first party or not necessarily first party, but Sega published games that are just awful, because he was a firm believer in, like, let's get the games out there. There's two things, and we're not going to have a whole debate on this, okay? Because I was a SNES fan over a Genesis fan, but I understand why it sold. I do. Because they monopolized the sports, I guess you'd say, what, genre. Like, there were no sports games on Nintendo systems outside of, you know, the handful of releases that they did get. And even if they did get all the releases, in terms of sales, that's where Genesis killed it. Like, they killed it in terms of your NHLs, your Maddens, all of your, you know, basketball games. NBA Jam outsold the SNES version. You know, things like that. Mortal Kombat with the blood, they were so smart doing that. That sold so many copies, it was crazy. And the other thing was just, you know, arcades. I know it sounds so stupid and it's so hard for people today to understand that, but Sega was a big player in the arcade scene, like huge. Nintendo was in the pre-NES era, and then they shifted gears to the NES and never looked back, right? Like, they just focused on the home market. But Sega was, like, I don't want to say king of the arcades, because for me they weren't king, but they were up there. They really were up there. And I like to say that, like, the part of the Saturn's failure was also that, was that just as games were switching over, right, to your Resident Evils, so more mature storylines, or just storylines in general, games that were, you know, had cinematics and all this sort of stuff, here's Sega, and they're still pumping out, you know, like a game that's meant to be played for half an hour, 20 minutes, something like that. And you really see it. You're going to see it in my first Saturn Day video. You're going to see it, that even in 1998, they were still making games that were very much influenced from the arcade. So that's it. That's my story. So do you want to talk a little bit about the video I just made?
Yeah, sure. So is this scheduled for Saturday?
Yeah, okay, so the video is scheduled video for Saturday, so by all means.
Before the podcast, exactly. So we're fine. Yeah. So... is there a particular reason why you went with Burning Rangers?
I always felt that game was so underrated. I thought it did so many things that were so unique for its time that I really wanted to just talk about that, because Sonic Team was was really getting into their stride around that time, around that period in time. So they never intended to continue Sonic forever. It was sort of like, from my understanding, from the research that I've done, they did a lot of different things, and they wanted to do different things. And honestly, they sound a lot like Naughty Dog, where they don't just want to do the same thing over and over and over and over and over again. And the Saturn was basically their chance of doing something very creative. Now, I know it's ironic because they're called Sonic Team, and Sonic became synonymous with Sega. So from a business standpoint, that probably wasn't the, you know, wasn't the best thing to do. And I know there's a whole bunch of stuff with Yuji Naka involved in a 3D Sonic, so I don't want to get into all of that. But the point was that it remains one of the most unique games that they ever put out, and it feels so much like a Sonic game in so many different regards. Like, you know you're playing a Sonic team game. And I really just really wanted to play something to ease myself back into the Saturn. I just wanted to play something that was quick, that was fun, that I could do a video on, incorporate a little bit of research into it, and make it just a fun video. And I hope I succeeded with that.
Yeah, no, it was by far the best video you've ever made. I thought, like, there was, I always used to tease you before about adding pictures and stuff, and you were like, nobody has time for that. But now you actually, like, yeah, there's a lot of quality in that. I really enjoyed it. Even footage of other games when you talk about other stuff. So yeah, really, really fun. Never played, obviously, Burning Rangers. I know when I had a Saturn, like, I had quite a lot of cool games, but there was some games I was trying to get, but the prices were always, like, and compared to today, they were bargains, basically. But I know that one of the games I was trying to get back then was Panzer Dragoon Saga. And back then, and that's, like, what, 4, 5, 6 years ago, maybe 7 years ago?
Yeah, something
even,
like that.
Even more, actually, than that. Because when I got it, I was with someone else, and she gave it to me for Christmas. So that's, like, 10 years ago, actually. And Panzer Dragoon Saga was like $300, maybe $400 at the most for a good copy.
Something like that.
Now
yeah,
it's a lot more than that. But even then, like $400, no way I would spend that on a single game. So, but it's Burning Rangers. I know you talked about it. I remember seeing the review back in the day. It doesn't seem like a game that I would like, but I could imagine that in 1998. And even you, right now, you still enjoy it, obviously. Probably something that people would enjoy. But yeah, it's very fascinating to me, the Saturn, because what I played, and strangely, what I loved the most about the Saturn were the fighting games, especially Virtua Fighter. I don't know why. I've played 3D fighters before. I've played Tekken. Never really, like, clicked as much as it did when I played Virtua Fighter. And I don't know if it was just the feeling of playing on those classic controllers in, like, whatever year it was, like 2010. Like, it's something that you experience for the first time with those sticks. Maybe that added to the fit, but I really enjoyed Virtua Fighter and that the Street Alpha series. And also, was it X-Men versus Street Fighter or Street Fighter versus X-Men? I think it was the Japanese one. Not sure, but man, that game was awesome. That game was just fantastic. Yep. So, yeah, I had a lot of fun with those. And obviously, Shining the Holy Ark, which I can't wait for you to redo. Was that one of the games? Because you should have two copies of that game. Was that one of the games you found? And that one, like, obviously, that's one of my biggest regrets, was that my damn Saturn kept freezing. I was like 10 or 12 or 15 hours into the game having so much fun. Like, I was on a 100% run of that game. It's just a classic, and it's my style of game. I love dungeon crawlers. And then it would keep freezing every time, like, I would get into an encounter. It could be 5 minutes into a dungeon, it could be 15 minutes into a dungeon, but eventually it would freeze and I would be screwed. There was no way around. So yeah, unfortunately I never got to finish it, but that's a game I think even today I would love. And it's funny because I could swear I heard at one point that Sega was, when they were doing 3D releases on the 3DS, I could swear I remember that they talked about bringing that game to the 3DS. I'm not sure if they ever did. I don't think they did. Obviously, it would probably have been a Japanese release only, but man, that would have been amazing.
Yeah, that is a game that I will cover for sure because it's one of my favorite games of all time. I love that. I absolutely love that. And it hasn't been released. It hasn't been released anywhere else. And that's actually one of the messages. That's what I wanted to start with Burning Rangers. Like I said, it was a perfect type of game to start. And I'm so glad I did because I had nothing but problems, nothing to do with Polymega, but my Elgato software got all corrupted. So I had to reshoot all of the footage. So I basically had to redo everything from scratch all over again. And had I had to do that with an RPG, I never would have done it. You know how discouraging that would have been? I would have been like, F this. Yeah. But yeah, and so anyways, no, that's definitely one. And it was just, I really wanted to set the tone, you know, that like these Saturn Day videos are going to, they're not going to be weekly. They're going to come out when I have time, but I'm going to put a lot of effort into this and really try and do them justice today. And I think the quality of the video really turned out. I know some people think I speak too slow or whatever when I do those reviews, but we'll see. We'll see how it does, but I'm hopeful that we're on to something special here. And I found a couple of very, very, very good imports, so I'm going to be covering those shortly. There's some for you that I know you're going to be like, wow. Like, there's one in particular that I'm thinking of that I know you're going to be floored because it's, you know, in hindsight, what is the expression? Hindsight's 2020 or whatever. This game would have bombed. I'm not going to tell you what it is, but it's just a 2D platformer. Okay, it's an action platformer, and it would have bombed in North America with like all the 3D stuff and, you know, everything like that. But it would have been remembered. Now, like today, people would be like, this is a classic because those 2D games on the Saturn look stunning. Like, they look absolutely stunning, especially the ones that make use of the 4 megabyte RAM cart. And if I'm not mistaken, this is one of those games. And so anyways, all this to say that thanks to the Polymega and thanks to, you know, me just taking my time, I think we're going to be on to something really special with this, and I'm hoping that it resonates with people and they like it. So we'll see.
Yeah, no, I'm pretty sure it will be a hit because the first video is a hell of a way to start this this new series. So can't wait to see what's next.
Oh, I'm working on it. I captured some footage today for it, so we'll. We'll see. It's a Japanese exclusive, but it's a Japanese exclusive that has now been translated. And thanks to the Polymega, it's the very first time ever that I will play this game in English.
And that should tell you what it is right there.
That pretty much, yeah, it should. But so far, I've played like maybe like an hour, and it's like, if I'm not mistaken, it's about a 12-hour game. And so like, I'm loving every minute of this. I truly am. I'm loving every minute of this. I'm like, oh man, like, where have you been all my life? And I don't understand. And I say it, I'm going to probably end up saying this in like almost every video, but I truly do not understand why some of these companies don't re-release these games. I just don't get it. Like, $5, like, who cares, you know what I mean? Like, I just don't get it. Yeah. I'm totally lost. And it's like, the Polymega is an emulation based console, so yeah. Don't give me this crap.
It's funny that you know, not last year but the year before, maybe it was last year, we got a re-release of Night Trap of all games. Oh, yeah. And Police,
yeah,
Nuts,
exactly.
And Panzer Dragoon Saga and Shining the Holy Ark. Nope, no releases of that. But
that's right.
Night Trap, you know, it's like classic,
yeah,
game.
Exactly. Yeah, for sure. You know, for sure. It's like, I don't know. I tell you, like, I often just sit there. When I heard that Night Trap was, like, coming back, I was like,
yeah, I actually played it. That was the first time I played that game, and I had fun for an hour. But I was like,
yes,
oh, my God. It's so hilarious. The the difficulty though, man, those games were hard. But still, it's I looked at the cutscenes online and it's just wow, hilarious. But yeah, it's a classic for the wrong.
That's right. Wrong exactly. Reasons.
It's not like
that's yeah. It. Exactly. And I'm like, you know, it boggles my mind because when like I said, I'm uploading a million games, right? Like right now. So like I look at like the TurboGrafx-16 CD games I have and I'm like, ah, you know, that was a fun one or this was a fun one or ooh, that one was terrible. And I'm going through and I understand like the console totally bombed here. So I get it. You're not going to really like spend the time to like, you know, invest in translations and this and that and everything else. But a shooter has virtually no language in it at all. And I'm looking at the, you know, I have like maybe what, 25, something like that, like English language CD games. And then I have like what, 85 or something of the Japanese ones. And I'm going through and I'm like, oh man, that was such a good game. Oh, that was a great shooter. Oh, that was a good fighter. Or, oh, that was a good, you know, whatever, blah, blah, blah. And I'm just like, well, maybe not fighters, except for Street Fighter 2. But I don't know. I don't get it. And what drives me crazy is that like the Sega CD, how the hell did Sega not learn? Like as they were going on, like in Japan, there were tons of other releases that they had that were really good games. Like, I don't get it. And then to follow that up.
And well, Sega has had its head up its ass, man. Like, you have to remember at one point they were releasing games for the Master System, the Genesis, the 32X, the Sega CD, the Game Gear, and the Saturn all at the same time. That's a successful strategy if you've ever heard one.
Yes, like, yes.
I don't know. I don't think they knew what they were doing exactly. Like, they were just throwing stuff at the wall and hoping something sticks, like.
Yeah, and I think you're 100% right. And the truth is, I often feel the same is true today. That, like, they still don't know what the hell they're doing for most of the stuff that they do. It I don't know, it's just, it's really weird. I find it, like, so bizarre. And you know, going back and playing some of these games, and especially the one I'm playing for this Saturn day.
Wasn't there also a system between the Saturn and the Dreamcast that never came out? The Neptune or something like that? What was?
Yeah, but that, yes, but that was meant, if I'm not mistaken, that was meant to be a Saturn and a 32X, if I'm not mistaken.
Okay, so it was another add-on like or something like that.
Well, yeah, but don't, like, I might be totally wrong, because if I remember right, there was a Saturn with a built-in Netlink. I think that's what you're thinking of, which was, yeah, I think that's what it is.
Okay.
That it was the one that would have the modem built into it, okay. And, like, the RAM card built into it type of thing. I'm pretty sure that's what it was. But, listen, it's been so long since I've looked at, like, the history of this stuff that I have no idea. But they're nuts. Like, they've always been totally crazy. But going back, like I was saying, like for this review, capturing footage for this review, I'm sitting here and I'm like, man, this is a great story. You know, like this is a great game. And, in you know, maybe for its time, maybe it would have bombed in North America. But the fact that it's never been re-released, that's what boggles my mind. Like you said, with Shining the Holy Ark, I don't get it.
Am I crazy though? Totally wasn't it announced at some point for the 3DS as part of the 3D classics? But I could have dreamed it. But
well, I'm pretty sure it was Shining in the Darkness that you're thinking of. Let's see. Yeah, no, there's. I don't see any. There's remake requests. Nintendo Life did an article saying why it would be so awesome to do it. Let's see if I'm right. Shining in the Darkness, which was the first game on the Genesis. You would have liked that. No game ideas.
Oh, you're right. It was a Nintendo Life article that I saw that I much have missed over the years or confused over the years as an announcement.
Check out, while you're there, check out Shining in the Darkness review by Nintendo Life. Don't read it or anything, but take a look at the visuals and stuff, and you'll see that, like, it was a pretty cool game. It wasn't great, though. The first one wasn't great, and it wasn't by Camelot. It was by Climax, but maybe they changed their name or something. I don't know. Anyways, whatever. Whatever the case may be. It's all this to say that, like, Sega, I think, really, to this day, I still don't understand it. Like, I just don't get it.
All right. So I guess that will be it for today.
Yeah, that's going to be it. So, well, we're actually doing these a little more frequently than normal. I'm shocked and or amazed. All right, so I'll wrap this up by I'll give you guys Steven's home address in the comments in the description, so you can send him death threats and everything for killing a mouse. And
I'm pretty sure I'll get more death threats for how I speak of Sega in this episode than the mouse.
Probably. That's probably true. But all right, guys, let me know what you thought of the Saturn Day video. I'm always taking different, you know, games requests and stuff like that. Like Steven mentioned in the past, just because you say it doesn't mean I'm going to actually cover it. It really, I'm just looking for some inspiration sometimes. I have the next two releases, I think, pretty much locked, like what I really want to cover. But hey, whatever, you know, sometimes you guys inspire me, like one of you did the other day, mentioned a fighting game. I was like, I'd never even heard of it before, and then I looked it up, and I actually own it, and then when I watched a video or two on it, I was like, oh, yeah, okay, I know what this is. So that's what I'm actually really trying to strive for after this initial release, is to do a couple of games that you may not have heard of. The next Saturn Day video, of course, you most likely have heard of, but I think after that, I'll try and cover a game that I don't think many people have heard of. So anyways, with that, I shall say, have a great whatever day, evening, whenever you're listening to this. Be well, and we'll be back soon. Take care, everyone.